You're listening to Holocaust survivor Mel Fedderbusch, interviewed by his son on the occasion of his 90th birthday. Mr. Fedderbusch spent much of his adult life not speaking about his horrific experiences in order to safeguard the feelings of his family. Today, after having 5 grandchildren, he has agreed to reveal the details they've never heard. On this broadcast, Mr. Fedderbusch discusses the concentration camps and death camps at Buchenwald, Triglitz, and Theresienstadt. He reveals details about living in the Polish ghettos and working as a slave laborer for the Nazis. He shares his harrowing experience of being falsely arrested and placed in solitary confinement, and his personal account of the murder of his parents and 9-year-old twin sisters, plus his heroic attempt to save his own life by leaping from a Nazi cattle car headed for the infamous death camp, Auschwitz. Mr. Fedderbusch's testimony and original Buchenwald passport can be viewed at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York. His eyewitness accounts can be accessed in the Fortunoff Archives at Yale University and at the Shoah Visual History Foundation, founded by Steven Spielberg. He's a speaker with the Holocaust and Human Rights Education Center in Purchase, New York, where he visits high school students, bringing his message of perpetual hope, global peace, and the end of prejudice. He's an adamant proponent of patriotism for the United States of America and support for her ally in freedom, liberty, and democracy, the State of Israel. This unprecedented live global broadcast is brought to you by TalkRadioX.com. And now, here's your host, Greg Fedderbusch.
And now part 6, the final part of Mel's story. He brings the entire experience to a conclusion. And then in episode 7, you'll get a chance to hear him answer questions from students all around the world. If you'd like your question to be included, please send it to melsurvived@aol.com. So when they started bringing these your townspeople to Sobibor and to Treblinka, the death camps, they were already running the gas chambers, or they were not. They hadn't started that yet, or
you don't know. They had it started already. They had it.
They did have it.
They had it.
So as soon as they got there, they were gassed, or did they keep them there for a period of time?
No. As soon as they got there, immediately they took them to be gassed. They selected a few people to be the Sonderkommando, which means they helped.
So they forced certain Jews to help them with the gassing. Is that what you're saying?
Not with the gassing so much, but with the dead bodies taken away from the gas. Chambers and put them on. They did not have at that point any crematoria yet, so they just burned them. They stuck them up like wood, and they burned them.
What do you mean stuck them up? They stood them up?
You know, like wood?
They stood up the bodies? They stacked them in piles.
Exactly.
And
they burned them like this because they didn't want to leave any evidence.
Yeah. So okay, but this you didn't know that yet.
No.
At this point,
we had no idea.
And so so they took all these people away. They killed a lot of these other Jews from where were they from? Slovakian? What did you say?
Slovakia. This is where, you know, Muncy's husband.
Muncy, Janko.
Janko was from Slovakia.
So you're talking about
he was in the underground, so they didn't take him.
I see. So it was his people were the ones who were brought to your airport and worked there.
As a matter of fact, the name of the city the people came from, they all came from one city called Preshov, and very few survived.
I've heard of Preshov.
You must have done.
Is that near? Was that near where mommy was lived?
Well, yes, that was the general area. Yes,
it was part of the Czech Republic.
Right.
Which was bordering Poland. It was very close. Right.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. So these folks didn't, they didn't think that they were supposed to be going, and they were, so the Germans went into their houses and killed them? Or did did they try dragging some of them out and sending them, or what did they do?
Yes, they did everything. They killed, there were some old people who could not go or move. They killed them.
And what? Who was in charge of the? What did they do with the dead bodies there?
Who? They had to clean them up. Who knows? Somebody had to clean it up.
So you don't know about.
As a matter of fact, you know, the odd thing is that they in my place and my aunt's place, they had a family called, Feldman, the same name as my mother's maiden name, and they were from Slovakia. There was an older couple and a daughter and her boyfriend. They lived in there in my aunt's house, in my aunt's apartment, whatever you call it, or room. And they also went.
Oh, you just remembered that?
Yes. And their name was Feldman. That's why it was so, that's why I remember it.
So you're at the airport. Everybody's now gone from your town.
Yeah, so at that point, Dublin became Judenrein, which means no Jews are supposed to live there anymore. That's it. So at that point, everybody went, we were lucky to be in that camp, okay? That we had those who worked in other places that were not in that camp or didn't work anywhere and was not in that camp. They were desperate to get into this camp now. They were paying off to get in.
Wow.
You know, all of a sudden, this camp became paradise.
Was there anybody that you knew able to get in, or do you?
Yes, of course, I knew some people, not too many. Henry, my brother, he was not supposed to be there. Henry, before this happened, he worked on a railroads, something with railroads. They had to carry the railroad, railroads, actually,
yeah.
The steel,
yeah,
to lay down and all that. It was terrible work. I don't know, somehow he did not want to be, he thought this is an advantage to be there. He was not the only one. And then there was a time, then he didn't want to be there anymore because it became dangerous, they didn't get enough food, or it was too hard, or whatever it was much better where Sydney and I was. So he just came, ran away from there, and came to my camp. He was there illegally. He was not supposed to be there. And everybody, they were counting the people every day. You could not be there. You can't hide. And besides, the other people who wanted to be safe, they would not, you know, some people were not friendly. They would not want you to be there. Anyway, he was there, and I had a situation going for me. Listen, I don't ever told you this. They sent me once to work, to do some repair work in an office for the German who was the head of the entire, the maintenance of the entire airport. He was like a god. His name was Schneider. He decided, happened to be a nice person, but he could decide for somebody to live or die within any time. Nobody saw him, and so when the order came to Schneider's office, had to be fixed, the door or some whatever it is. Everybody was afraid to go. So I said, okay, I'll go. I was there working there for a whole day fixing things up, and Schneider wasn't there all day long. I never saw him. But when I came back, people asked, so how did you see Schneider? I said, of course I did. I worked all day. Really? How was he? And I said, well, he's a human being. And I said, you know, he's a nice man. As a matter of fact, I said, he asked me I asked him if I can ask my camp leader, the Jewish man. He says, "Tell him that you can have a double portion of everything." So when we came back, I said, "Mr. Venkat," his name was Venkat, I said, "I worked for Schneider this all day long today." And I asked him simply, he was very happy with my work. And he said, "Would you like anything?" I said, "Yes, I would like a little more food." I said, "He told me to tell you to give me a double portion of anything that's being served today." And sometimes it says, "Give him anything." He believed everything I said. He said, are you crazy? And I said, "I'm not crazy. If you don't believe me, go and ask him." It's like asking God, you know. So he believed, and I got everything I wanted. So when my brother was there illegally, I said to Venkat, the same camp leader, I said, "I spoke to Schneider. I went specially to talk to him. That about my brother, and I went." He says, "It's okay to be here to work with you," and so he was. I told him that, and he said, "Well, if Schneider said, what can I do?" But they called before that happened, mind you. There was a killer by the name of Patterson was his name. He was a killer. He was a beautiful looking man, well built. In the Gestapo uniform, and he talked very politely. He always said, "Hello, how are you?" to everybody. But he was a killer. So he came, and he was supposed to kill 8 people who ran away from that place where my brother came from, where Henry came from. He was supposed to kill them. And he came, he called out the names, and I said, "Henry, Henoch, stay and don't say a word when they call your name." They called out 8 names, and they took them all out. We were all standing like soldiers lined up. These guys came out, and they were kneeling, and he killed all of them right in front of our eyes with a gun. And they called my brother's name. That's why I went to Schneider. I didn't go to Schneider. I went to Venkat the same night, and I said, "Look, my brother is supposed to be here. I told you that Schneider is the one who told me to tell you that." And he, that's how I saved him. And he, unfortunately, eventually got killed by them anyway.
I know you'll, I want to hear that story too again, but, did your brother witness these guys getting shot too?
Sure, he was standing right with me and with us.
Did anybody react?
No. Everybody was standing there like frozen.
Did you close your eyes, or did you have to look at it? Because did you have to see it?
We were there. We were standing there.
But I mean, did you turn your head or? Could you not even?
You don't dare to do anything.
No, you just had to stand and look.
You're so frozen. You're so frightened. You know. But that's how I saved Henry for this. And this, I saved him. This was like, for how long did I save him? For about two or 3 years.
So
2 years at least.
He got about 2 more years, but those 2 years were not so great.
No, we were in camp, then we went to two other camps, then we went to Buchenwald. And
all right.
From Buchenwald, and he was sent to another camp where they killed him. They beat him up so badly that he was on the bank lying there, couldn't do anything, and died 2 days after the war ended.
So this is still now at the airport. What else transpired there at this camp, or did you ever end up going back to the ghetto in your town?
No, the ghetto was, there was no Jews anymore in town. That was the end. Nobody went ever back to the town. There was no place to go. It was too dangerous, because any Polak would see that, any Polish man or woman and didn't feel like getting a half a pound of sugar. That's what they paid for a Jew. They would turn you in, you know. And so nobody. But there were a situation where 10 people escaped, and this is the one, Brankosch. That's the one that wrote that email to me last week, was it?
Oh yeah.
This was a situation where 10 people escaped, and they had guns, and. But it was okay because nobody. There was no consequences for that. I don't know why.
Did they get away? Where did they end up?
They went to the forest. There was no place to go except for the forest.
And they survived?
They did not survive. The Polacks killed them. Only one guy survived. Her uncle. That girl's uncle.
Oh, the one who survived. wrote you the email last week to us?
Yes. And I knew him. He came to the meetings. In Florida, when we had those meetings in Florida, those gatherings.
Yeah.
He came to the gatherings.
He was the only one who survived.
He was the only one of that group, yes.
Why did I know why the Polish people killed them, but how did that transpire? Do you know? Were they just...
I know. This was a different situation. There was one guy in that group whose sister got killed by a farmer, and he knew the farmer. So the first thing he did, he went to the farmer and killed him. There was an underground Polish organization, very strong.
And you knew about it at this point?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
They took orders from the Polish exile government in London. They did not accept any Jews in that underground. They found out that he killed this farmer, or the farmer family, the whole family killed. And they eventually found them and killed the whole group. Somehow, this Brankosch survived. Oh, he survived because, I remember now, because he then left them. He went to with his brothers who were in a different place altogether. That's how he survived.
Uh-huh. So he left before the Polish people came to kill them.
Exactly.
So what else? Anything else? So what's the next thing that happened after that?
Oh, a lot of things happened in that. We were there up until July 20th, 1944, which was...
Did you see
1945. The war ended in 1945. So we were there until a year before the war, ended.
So what? I guess since we only have about 15 minutes left, why don't we just get to what happened next when you left? When they took
the best thing. What happened next is the Russians, they came close to where we were, where in Demlin, and they came close to Warsaw. We were not too far from Warsaw. And they stopped. In fact, this is a very interesting story about Warsaw. The Polish people made an uprising against the Germans.
That's called the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising.
Was a different uprising. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was a Jewish uprising, and this was 2 years before that.
Okay.
But this was an uprising only by the Polish. And there were no Jews there left, and they were clean. Warsaw was so. Anyway, the Polak made, and they were hoping that the Russians would help them. But the Russians, Stalin was very smart. His army stopped just before Warsaw, and this was our area where we were. They stopped right there. And the famous thing is that the Russians stopped deliberately so that the Germans could kill off those Polish people who did the uprising, and they did. 200,000 Polish people were killed at that over there. And after this, the Germans had to leave, and then the Russians walked in. But we were part of that situation because the Russian army stopped right there, and a lot of about 60 some boys from our place ran out. I mean, left the camp. It was easier to leave, and we didn't think. We all wanted to leave. In fact,
hold on. The Russians came so the Nazis who were running the airfield had already left.
They already had left. Yes,
because they
all these Germans had left. It was almost empty of Germans
because this was the end of the war. Now,
no, this was not the end of the war. This was 1944.
So they left because they heard that the Russians were invading.
Because they left, they didn't want to be captured by the Russians.
Okay.
Exactly. So to make a long story short, these kids who run away from the camp are the camp leader, the Jewish guy, he was from Austria. He said that these guys were killed by the Polish underground, and we didn't want to believe it. We thought that he said it because he has his own, interest for us not to run away. And sure enough, the same day, Germans came that he organized, and they put us on wagons, and we went west and to another town in Poland by the name of Częstochowa, which is on the German border, and we were in camps over there till January. In January, some of the camps over there were liberated by the Russians, but they managed to take out me and the camp that I was in, all men, and we went to Buchenwald. And Sydney was with me and Henrich. We went from there, we went to Buchenwald, okay? And in Buchenwald, that's another story. Have you got any questions?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have 10 minutes left. I'd like to know a little bit about what Czeslakova was like and what Buchenwald was like.
Yeah, well, Częstochowa was a town, a Polish town, very popular, famous for the Black Madonna. And the Polish farmers, people, used to walk, and they still do. It's a tradition for them to walk to that town to pray to the Black Madonna.
It's a statue?
It's a painting, a picture.
Oh, okay.
And that was town. This town was famous for that. But this town also had industry where they were manufacturing a lot of things out of steel manufacturing, and stuff like that. It was quite large, that factory. We were working in that factory. I was working in woodworking, and Sydney and Henry were working in. Outside, that they did the dirty work, and there was a guy who was beating the people badly, and as I said, in January, I can't remember exactly the date, the Russians came close. They pulled us to. We went to Buchenwald, and the rest of the camps. There were two other camps over there with women and children and men. And some of them were from Demblin, and they were liberated right there and then. And for us, the trouble really started in Buchenwald. And in Buchenwald, I was a few weeks there, and they sent me to Triglitz, which is the story you've got on
the... Well, what's the trouble that happened in Buchenwald?
In Buchenwald, we did nothing. So
you're in a camp.
And the camp in Buchenwald. We did nothing because maybe they didn't have they were not organized enough. And besides, you have to understand it was already towards the end of the war, and the Germans were really not getting any orders, apparently, and they were really confused. They had no idea what to do themselves. You know,
were they killing? Were they exterminating Jews in Buchenwald?
No. They had people who were killed or died. There was a crematoria to burn them. But they did not do.
They didn't gas them. They didn't have gas chambers.
They didn't have gas chambers over there. Only if they killed some here and there. That's and a lot of them people. A lot of them starved to death. Of course, a lot.
And they would throw them in the ovens.
Right.
And you saw that? Did you work on that at all?
No, I did not. I just volunteered once in my life. That was there, and they took us to the railroad. There was a railroad
track
over there, and we had to unload wagons full of dead people.
Oh, you did
this
that?
This was the job I had to volunteer. So I had no idea where I'm going, but that's what happened.
Where were they coming from? These people?
Who knows? I have no idea.
They were trained.
Wagon, maybe 40 wagons of dead people.
In one day?
Yes, they all came at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Same.
And you did what with them?
We had to unload them.
Unload them and put them where?
Unload the wagons. And we put them all on a big pile. And the next day, I don't know, maybe the next day they took them to the crematorios.
Oh, so you didn't volunteer the next day, huh?
No, God forbid. I didn't want that, you know. But this was the only time that I volunteered, and this is what I did. So then after this, a couple of days later, they separated me from my brothers, and they sent me to Triglets.
Uh-huh.
And when I got to Triglets, I was happy that my brothers were not with me, because it was a death camp. It was a terrible situation.
What did you see?
We had to load dead people on the same wagons that we arrived. They went back to Buchenwald. They went to Buchenwald
to be
the dead, to be buried,
to be burnt.
Burnt, right?
Did they bury them in Buchenwald, or did they burn them?
No, there was no cemetery.
So you had to load the bodies onto the car. That was your job. How long did you have to do that for?
No, I was not the only one. There were others also to do the same thing. And then after this, this is the place where we were digging tunnels, and they gave us very little food, and people died, and so on and so on. And then a few weeks after that, they sent us, they kept on, they didn't know, they were so confused, these Germans. Apparently, looking at it now, I could see how they had no idea what the heck they were doing. The rumors were we were on the wagons, half wagons for animals, like, and it was cold, bitter cold. It must have been 20 below zero over there. In fact, if you listen to the Battle of Bulge, it was at the same time, and they were describing how cold it was, the American soldiers. It was really very bad, and they buried every day hundreds of people.
On the train? Off the train?
Off that train, yes. We didn't know where we were going. Rumors were that we were going to Theresienstadt. And that's the place where I ran away from that train. Me and another fellow, a Russian fellow, the two of us ran away.
How did you do that?
Well, when the train had to slow down going uphill, make a curve or something, that's when we jumped, and it happened to be on a hill like. And the machine guns right away were right after shooting at us, towards us. Luckily, we were tumbling down like that hill, and there were a lot of trees, and it was very difficult for them to really aim at us, because we were in motion, downhill, the train was moving, and it was also trees. And so it was almost impossible to hit us.
Was there snow?
Oh, yes, there was snow and ice and everything. We stayed in the forest for a couple of days, and we could not take it anymore. We were cold, freezing, and we didn't have any food. The little food that my Russian friend had, because he worked in the kitchen, he had some pieces of bread. We ate that. After this, there was nothing left. So we ate some grass He was from a farm. He knew what kind of grass he could eat. So he ate that, and we couldn't take it anymore. It was impossible. So we decided to go. We saw a little village downhill. So we decided to go down to that village. And as we stepped out of the forest, halt, was a German young guy with a rifle in civilian clothes. He says, Ausweise bitte, meaning give me your identification.
Uh-huh.
Identification, please. And I didn't have any identification. So the only thing for me to do, I made a big argument. I said, what the hell do you need identification for? We have no time for this nonsense. And we started arguing, you know. And he says, now at this point, he takes the gun and towards us, pointed at the gun. Either you have it or I'm going to kill you. He says, I says, look, I have here, I had frames from glasses that were gilded, like, I don't know if it was gold, probably it was gilded. I picked it up somewhere, I can't remember where. I said, here, take this, because we have no time to go anyplace. He took it, he says, come along with me anyway. So he was, let me tell you, he was not too bright, that German. So I went, my Russian guy, he was a trained soldier in the army, and he was trained to kill, to be killed or kill. This is what it was doing at war. And I didn't pay attention. It was downhill. I went first. The German was behind me with a gun, and behind him was a Russian. And all of a sudden, I hear a noise, a scream. I turn around. I see the Russian is on top of him. And he choked him to death. He killed him. And then we pulled him back into the forest, and we covered him up. And we went to town anyway, to the village. We walked into this first house. There was a woman who was washing clothes. You know, they didn't have any washing machines, so they washed once a week or once a month, whatever. But when they washed all day. So we happened to catch her washing. And I said, lady, in German, of course, I spoke German fluently. And the Russian and I made out that I was the only one who's going to talk, just in case they cross-examine us. And then one way he would say that he does know German, and I would be the only talker. I said, lady, do you have, we are on the road for 3 days. Could you please give us something to eat? She didn't even look at us, and she says, why don't you help yourself? I just cooked a pot of stew. It's on the stove. So we went to the stove, and that pot must have been a gallon and a half or 2 gallons big, filled with that stew, with meat and potatoes. Everybody gets a kick out of this. We finished that. It didn't take us 10 minutes. It didn't take us 10 minutes. Immediately, we finished this right away.
You're lucky you didn't get sick, because a lot of people died after gorging themselves.
That's true.
After
we
the war.
We didn't have this in years, but we were all right. So then after that, I said, lady, I went back there to the other room where she was. I said, lady, could you please let us wash up and give us a change of clothes? So she goes, yes. She says, okay, go ahead. I was there, wash up. There was the water, blah, 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 blah. We washed up. We cleaned up. She gave us jackets and pants and from her husband and sons that were in the army, on the Russian front. And when we walked out of that house, we looked decent. We didn't look like prisoners anymore. We looked decent. And a middle-aged man stopped us, and he says, well, what are you guys doing here? And I said, well, we were coming from a Arbeitslager, meaning a working camp. You couldn't say you're German, even though I spoke German fluently. I said, I am Polish, he is Russian. And
why couldn't you say you were German?
You couldn't say you're German because it was obvious, you know.
It was obvious that you weren't German.
That we're not Germans, of course not. So I said, what do you guys want to do? I said, well, we want to do some work if we can possibly find. If not, we're going to keep going straight east home. So he said, well, if you want to come to my house, you can do some work in my house. So we went there and we did some work. But 2 hours later, he came running. He says, no, you got to leave. You got to leave. Very nervous. And I saw that. And I said, well, if you have to leave, could you give us a piece of paper that we worked for you? And I gave him my name, a Polish name, Jan Wojciechowski. Jan, meaning Johan. Jan is like John.
John, where did you get this name from?
Well, I knew somebody in Dublin by that name. So he wrote down in the event that Jan Wojciechowski was working for me satisfactorily in the event that he needs help of any kind. Just to make a long story short, he got the same note, a lot just like this for him, for my friend, the Russian guy. And now we decided there's no way to hide. We just have to go to the Bürgermeister, the mayor of the town, of the village, which is the next village. Decided to go to the next village and speak to the mayor. So on the way, there was like a half a mile or so farms on both sides of the street. There's no traffic. And I see from a distance a group of prisoners, just like we were in the striped uniforms. And I look, and as we get closer, I recognize some guys. And I didn't know what was happening. I later found out that these people were, that the train that we were on was bombed by the British. They thought it was the German soldiers. And they were scattered all over the place. And that's why they had the militia over there, that young guy, the German, also was looking for such people. I had no idea.
Oh, and he was from the train too?
No, the German that with the gun, you know?
Right.
He was looking for militia. And apparently, when these people ran away from the train and they scattered all over the place, every German got to know and they formed a militia to find these prisoners.
I see.
So
was anyone killed on the train, on the bombing of the train?
I must have been. That part I don't know.
You didn't ask them when you saw them what happened?
Wait a minute. How could I talk to them? They were guarded by the Gestapo.
Oh, they were walking with the Gestapo. They already, yes. They rounded them up.
Yes, they rounded them up.
Because they were probably originally on the train with them, yes?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I said to the Russian, let's make believe they don't exist. We're just going to walk. And if they're going to stop, I'll have to talk to them. Sure enough, they come close. Halt. One of the big SS Gestapo guys Ausweiser bit. I mean, it's the same thing. What do you call it? Identification, please. And I made an argument again with him. I had no choice. I had to argue. Argued. He says, stop arguing with me because there's no fooling, you know, and he pointed a gun at me. I said, all right, okay. I took out a piece of paper and I gave it to him, the piece of paper that this German gave me. And he read, I didn't know what was on that piece of paper. I didn't bother to look at it. He read that piece of paper and he became mad and he says, Verschwinde, get lost. He didn't like it, but he had to let us go.
Huh.
So we went, left. And we went directly to the Bürgermeister, the mayor.
They were so goddamn stupid and so frightened and such following sheep. They were so, you know, just... If they really if they really were leaders and they were really smart and knew what they were doing, the guy would have just shot you immediately. You know what I mean? But he at this point, he was probably so scared and
no, scared. He knew something was wrong with this, but he didn't want to. He may probably be scared anyway.
But they,
I'll make a long story short. We went to the Burgermeister, the mayor. And we told him, I told him the whole story.
What happened. What town is this? The name of the town?
It's Greg, you know something? I'm spending sleepless nights to remember the name.
You mean you have never remembered it or you forgot it?
No, I forgot. I knew it.
You used to know it.
Yes, of course.
Do you know approximately where it is on the map?
Yes, I do know where it is. Yes, I could probably find it on the map. Maybe. Maybe it's on the map, but maybe not because it was not really a town. It was a village. It's not too far from the Czechoslovakian border.
How did you know where? Did you know where you were approximately? Yeah. Like when you first went to this farmhouse with the woman, did you say where exactly are we, or did she set?
Well, we had a pretty good idea where we were because when we tell you know we were not stupid. When we were on the train, we knew the train was going east,
and you knew how far you were going.
Huh?
You knew how long you were traveling, and you knew where you were supposed to.
The sun goes under, and you know the sun really comes up. You know, and you also look at trees. Trees tell you where is east and where is west. They have a certain growth on trees.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that
really?
Tells you, huh?
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Oh yes, especially about the sun.
But it's German. You're in Germany,
right?
Near the which border?
This was near the Czechoslovakian border. The German-Czechoslovakian border. Dresden. Look at Dresden and look east of Dresden. East and south of Dresden. Something like Arnsfeld.
How far approximately? Any idea?
I don't know. Not far.
But not in...
Maybe 50 kilometers, maybe 100 kilometers.
But not past the border. Oh,
no.
That far. Oh, it is that far. So, do you hear of a town called Pirna?
No.
I'm fascinated by that because, okay, go ahead. I will look at this afterwards.
Okay. The Burgermeister was sympathized with. He was a very nice guy. To me, he was old. Maybe he was 50-some years old.
Right.
But to me, at that time, he was old. And he sympathized with us. He said, if Germany should win the war, he said he'll give me back everything that I lost. Because I told him that we worked on a camp for not a working camp where we got paid. They had such things, and foreigners worked on such camps. They snatched these people, they put them in those camps, and they did work. Very valuable to the Germans, and they got paid, and once a week they were allowed to go to town, and I knew all about it.
So you showed the Burgermeister?
I didn't have to show anything. He didn't ask me for anything. But he was very, very nice.
So he thought you were German?
No. I told him that I am Polish, he's Russian.
Uh-huh. So he thought that you were Polish, but the Germans took away your whatever, and he would get it back.
No, that we worked there for a couple of years. We had earned money. We bought stuff. And then they told us we can go home because the Allied forces came close, and we went on a train, and the train did not move, and then it started a bomb fell down, and we left the train in panic, and when we came back, the train was bombed, and all our belongings and everything was gone, including our passports and everything.
That's how you got away with not having anything on you.
Exactly. So he sympathized with us.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, what would you like to do now? I said, well, if you could place us on farms, we could do work. He says, okay. So he called up two farmers. He sent me to one, and he sent me to another one. My farmer, I came, they treated me like their own son, those Germans. So German families. And this was still in Germany. He, however, was treated like an animal.
The Russian?
Yes, by his farmer.
What was his name? Do you remember?
They didn't like him. Huh?
What was his name?
Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, it's been so many years. You know how many years? 60.
You know, it's so funny because I can see you and the face that you made when you said Ivan. It's so, it was like, okay, I'll just make up a name, Ivan.
That's right. I did. I'm not quite sure if it was Ivan.
That's hilarious. It probably was. Okay, go ahead. I love you, Daddy.
Well, anyway.
So the Burgermeister, so you're with this German family. And,
They really, the next day we went to work on a farm, and we started doing some planting, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. My back was killing me. And this farmer had two daughters and a wife, and everybody was doing that. And I couldn't, and they saw it. So they said, Johann, they called me Johann, go ahead and sit down in German. They said, sit down, it's okay. You know, I never heard such sympathy in my life.
Wow.
I sat down and then I started again because I really wanted to help. I wanted to be there. I didn't want to be fired or something like this, you know.
What did you think would happen if you were fired?
Fired? I don't know what I would have done.
You just
it meant life or death, you know.
You just assumed... Now, did you know that this was before the liberation? Yes, still.
Well, this was about 3 months before liberation.
So this is what month?
Could be March.
March 45.
Yeah.
Or
and so March at the end of March.
So it was already warm.
End of March.
Warm
it was already like towards the planting. So it was a nice day that day. I remember that. It was not very warm, but it was the sun was out. I can't remember that. But to want me to go on?
Yeah.
And so I was very happy. And I met my Russian friend every second, third day because it was within walking distance. I really liked it over there. I had my own room to sleep in. And all kinds of things transpired over this period of time. But
like what?
A lot of things.
Tell me.
Like a lot of Germans, the German army retreated, and a lot of civilian Germans who lived in outside of Germany in Czechoslovakia and other places, they returned. They came to Germany walking. Hundreds of thousands of people were walking day and night. And they're walking through that village, and the house, we were right not that far off the street. So we saw all, I saw.
Were there any other Jews around there at all?
No.
Wow. And do you get to see some really cute young German girls walking by?
Yes. That's another story. I had one day, a German girl came in to my house, it was after dinner. I'll never forget, came in to buy some eggs and milk, maybe some stuff like this. She lives across the street, and she was from Leipzig because they evacuated these people for safety because the Allies were bombing all the German towns. So they were evacuated to save them, right? And they lived across the street. She walked in. And I looked at her, and she resembled a beautiful Jewish girl that I knew from Dublin. I could not even talk to her. That meant death. Oh. You talk to a German girl, you get killed.
But you didn't. But they didn't know you weren't. Oh, they thought you were Polish.
Yes, you're not allowed to.
Oh, I see.
But right after the war ended, I walked over across the street to see her, to talk to her. You know?
What'd you say?
What I said. I tried a conversation. Who remembers what I said? But to the effect I wanted to date. And we went, you know, we went out together. We went for the few weeks that I stayed there, we were very friendly.
Very, very friendly?
Yes.
Physically friendly?
Yeah.
Very nice. You must have been having such a great time.
I had not, I didn't know what it meant in all these years.
But you didn't. But you didn't tell her who you were. She just called
you. She knew exactly who I was.
Oh, you told her the whole story?
Oh yeah, she knew. I told her that I am Jewish and all. I did not. When the war was over, I told my farmer right away who I was.
And what did they say?
And he said that he expected me to be Jewish. He sort of like had a hunch that I was Jewish. He said that, but of course he wouldn't. He liked me too much to say anything. You kidding?
Did he ask you what your real name is, or did he just keep calling you Johann?
Yeah, they kept on calling me Johann.
The girl called you Johann too?
No. I told her she called me Mendel.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what was her name? You don't remember.
Her name was Sylvia.
Really?
Sylvia Ufer.
Sylvia Ufer.
That name I remember. Mind you, I forgot everything, but I remember that.
Well, it's a little more interesting.
She went to a conservatory in, she came from Leipzig, the most famous conservatory in the whole wide world. Mendelssohn, all the most famous German composers went to that conservatory. This is where she was
evacuated from.
She was learning how to play the fiddle, the
violin.
The violin. And the way she played, you believe me, if I tell you what happened, I got to tell you someday what happened.
Tell me now. What someday?
What happened was, I told her that I'm going back to Buchenwald. She says she's going back to Leipzig. So she decided to go together.
I think you told me.
In the same direction.
I think you told me this.
And on the way, it took a long time because no railroads, nothing was available. We walked, hitchhiked, with all kinds of things. And a lot of time transpired, and we had to sleep over in different places. We walked into a house. I said, make room for us to sleep, and that was it. And
so easy to get into houses?
Huh?
Houses
where the Germans lived. We walked into a German house they lived.
So she
said, make room for us.
I see.
And they did. They had to. I was a survivor. We had a lot of power.
Really? You
know?
Well, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know about this.
Oh, yes. When I was still in that village, the Russians came in, and there were two Russians, Jews, high officers. And we spoke Yiddish to one another. They spoke Yiddish just like my father did. And he said to me, Mendel, go and do whatever you want and take whatever you want. I had power.
You mean the Germans?
The Germans were beaten. This was after the war already. They were beaten and the Russians raped the women. The Russians killed some of them, did everything. They didn't do enough to be even with this, what the Germans did to the Russians when they occupied there.
So the Russians were occupying Germany at that point, yes?
Yeah.
Is that how
it was? Not all of Germany.
But that area.
Germany was occupied by the Russians, by the Americans, by the British, and by the French.
So there was no German army or Nazis to be found?
Mm-hmm.
What did they do? They just sort of faded back into. They faded back.
Yeah, a lot of them were caught, and they were prisoners of war.
Did you see the Russians do anything to the Germans?
Oh yes, of course. I was there.
Still in that.
I protected my farm, my farmer. They couldn't touch me, but they went to any farm they wanted to, and they took the cows. Anything.
What do you mean they took the cows? Where did they take them?
They take them to be killed for food, to feed the army.
I see.
Oh, God. They did everything they wanted. You don't know what it means, occupation. What the Germans did to the Russians, they tried to be as bad, but it couldn't be. But I did not finish the story what happened at the end.
I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
What happened was, so when the war was over and I before I left for Buchenwald, I decided to go back to that German guy who gave me that piece of paper that saved my life. That piece of paper actually saved my life. If not for that, I would not be here. So I went back, and this woman, his wife, recognized me right away. Oh, my God. She didn't remember my name, but she recognized me.
How long had it gone by? A few months?
About 3 months or so.
Yeah.
I said, "Where is your husband?" She said, "He's in jail." I said, "Why is he in jail?" Well, she didn't tell me. I said, "Is he in a local jail?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, I'm going over to say what I can do for him." I walked over to the Bürgermeister. Over there, everything is the Bürgermeister, the mayor. And I introduced myself. I said, "My name is Melvin Federbusch, and I am a survivor. I was in Buchenwald." To tell, you know, the reason I tell him that is to show him the power I have had to in order for me to do what I want to do, you know, or to get him out. He says, "Oh, my God, is this your brother?" He says, "I was in Buchenwald myself for 10 years. I said, "Really?" He says, "Why were you there?" He says, "I am not Jewish, but I was a communist. Oh, that's why I was there." I said, "Really?" And so he said, "So we're brothers." I said, "I'm here for a reason." I told him, I want that guy by the name Otto Schwab, that guy who was in jail. I said, "I want him out because he gave me a piece of paper that saved my life." "Oh, my God," he says, "Brother, I'll do anything for you. This is not, this is, I mean, I can't do that." I said, "Why not?" He says, "He was the Nazi leader of our little village here, and he is the one that sent me to the concentration camp, to Buchenwald. That's why I was in Buchenwald for 10 years. I said, "Okay, can't do it." I said, "All right, I understand." I said, let's do it this way. There's a holiday this weekend. Let him go for the holiday, and then that's it. And then he has to come back.
But why did you care about him at this point if you knew what a horrible person he was?
Well, I still have felt obligated because he saved my life.
Mm-hmm. Otto Schwab?
Otto.
Schwab. S-C-H-W-A-B?
Right.
And what ended up happening to him? Didn't he
I took him with me to his house. I left, and that's it. And he had to go back after the weekend.
I see. Did he thank you?
Oh, of course. He didn't know what to do for me.
Did you tell him you knew he was a Nazi?
Yes, of course. He knew. I told him. So anyway, he knew that he has to go back, and he knew that he has no future. He knew it. Okay.
Love you, Daddy. Thank you so much. I want to do a little bit more, though. We'll set up another day, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Enjoy. Please remember to check back after the new year for Hour 7, where Mel Federbusch will answer questions from students around the world. And also your questions. If you have anything that you need to know that was brought up and that you need elaboration on, please email us at melsurvived, that's M-E-L, survived, at AOL.com, and we'll include it in that broadcast. We'll see you next time.